Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Let's start with some I ams. I am well. Say after me. Say it out loud. Let the vibration of your words penetrate the atmosphere around you. Let your ears hear what your mouth is saying. I am light. I am love. I am peace. I am wellness. I am wholeness. Okay. Hey, John, with Jason. Good. And congratulations on your recent nuptials. Hey, Joanne. All right, I gotta stop looking at that. I'll say hey to y'all later. I am peace. I am joy. There's something, it's one thing to say I have joy. It's a higher frequency. It's a higher vibration to say I am joy. It doesn't make sense to the natural mind. But when you say it, you don't just possess joy, you start connecting with joy itself. You become joy. You get lost in the joy. I am. There's even power in just saying those two syllables. Even if you don't say, I am peace, or I am abundance, or I am gratitude, just saying I am. Just try it. Say it like, I don't know, there's, you know, a lot of people think with chanting there's some benefit in repetition, and maybe there is. But just try it, like, just try it seven times. Just see what happens. I am. 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 I don't know how to explain it. There's something to it. I am wellness. I am well, but I am also wellness. I am whole, but I am also wholeness. I have peace, but I also am peace. I have love, but I also am love. I walk in the light. I have light. I embrace light. I possess light. Let there be light. But I also am light. The power is in the am. I am. When the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, where is Jesus of Nazareth? He says, I am. And all of those hundreds of men, perhaps nearly 1,000, fell backwards to the ground just with the force of I am. So when you start feeling negative forces coming against you, push back with an I am. As soon as you say an I am, even, and this may just be a generational thing, but the old Neil Diamond song, I am, I said, that's not what he's talking about, but there's something about when he, I always love Neil Diamond, when I hear that song from the 70s, where he decrees, I am, I said, I am, said I. And it's a song about existentialism, about I exist, even if, no, he says, and no one even heard, not even the chair. So it's kind of a dark song. And yet, if you just take out the phrase, I am, said I, there's something, I don't know, there's something to it. This morning I'm going to talk about, do you hear what I hear? And I know I am dialed up to a frequency where I hear things in songs that I can tell a lot of other people don't hear. That's why I'm selective about who I talk to, about what I hear in things. Because sometimes, I've been in situations before where people will nearly make fun of it. Like, how did you get that out of that? And I think, you know, I don't take it personally. I just think you guys are on a different wavelength from me. And I think that's why I love connecting with the Metron community, because you hear what I hear. I'm not going to sing it this morning. I was going to. I brought my guitar up here, but I need to polish it up a little bit. Maybe I'll do it. When are we doing the party? Wednesday night? Maybe I'll do it Wednesday night for the Zoom party. But there's just, man, as soon as I walk up here and say these things, I start feeling, whether you call that the anointing, the presence, whatever, the I am-ness, all of that stuff is real. So, you know, if you're dealing with some COVID symptoms, say I am wellness. I mean, do all your stuff. Get the vaccine if you can. But in the meantime, in the interim, wear your mask, etc. But also say, I am well. I am not just alive. I am life. I am eternal. I am that I am. When God spoke to Moses at the burning bush and he said, I am that I am, tell them I am sent you. What he's saying is I defy labels. I defy description. To even ascribe a modifier to me would diminish the purity of the I am. To even say I am good is less than saying I am. Whew, what? Did I really just say that? My God, I'm like my granddaddy taking my coat off to preach. let me make some announcements before I get into my word. Shauna Corelli's doing her event tonight, and there's information on the shout out. Avery texted me yesterday and said seven new people signed up for the shout out. There's some people in Metron that for years have shown up at the wrong date for things, and they'll say, I didn't know it was today. And I say, well, it was on the shout out. And they go, the what? You know that email that she's been diligently putting together for 6 years, nearly 7 years, that comes to you, that if you read that, you will know all things. So thank you for those of you that signed up for that. You just go to bishinthenow.com, and there's a little form you fill out, and that way you will know everything. But that's tonight, and then this coming Wednesday night, the 23rd, is that right? Wednesday? Yeah. Christmas Eve is Thursday. Christmas is Friday. Yeah, Wednesday night, the 23rd. And we're going to do it at 8 o'clock. I've never done a Zoom event. I've done some Zoom interviews. And my kids and I, we've been talking to a production company about some projects they're wanting to do. I've done some Zoom things on the other end, but I've never hosted a Zoom event. So this will be a first for me. But it's going to be great. I would love to have you know what? I started to say I would have preferred to have an in-person thing, but I don't even know if that's true anymore. I love the in-person stuff, but it's like I said to you the other day when Paul wrote to the Corinthians and he said, I knew a man in Christ 25 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell. I love that idea that he had become so conscious of his I am-ness that he said, I don't remember if I met you physically or if we met on some other plane. And I love that, and I feel myself sort of tapping into that. I'm not there 100%, but I can feel when the waves of that hit the shore, and I keep having these little glimpses of, you know, knowing you in person, but also knowing you in a place, a different place. I love you in a place where there's no space and time. Oh, I love that song. Anyway, hey, Beck, I'm glad you're well. I love you too. You know, those of you that follow me on Facebook, you know, I did a Christmas Auld Lang Syne this week, and it got me super emotional. And I started not to post it that way, but then I thought, what the heck? That's what I was feeling. I'm just gonna put it out there. And the line that really got me is, and pray this time next year we'll all be there to something to cheer for a Christmas Auld Lang Syne. Just thinking about everything, that we've been through in 2020, the idea of projecting, you know, into the future. Next year will be, I don't even want to say it's going to be better. I'm going to say it's going to be different. It's going to be more back to normal. But honestly, and God knows I don't want to in any way diminish or trivialize all the thousands of people that have lost their lives to COVID. I don't mean to sound dismissive of that at all. But I do think the world is trying to reboot itself. And there's been a few times this year I've lost sight of that and have nearly felt overwhelmed with it. And then when I get back up, tuned into the right mindset, I think, no, something's dying so that something else can live. And again, I don't mean to make it sound like all those people had to die for that. I wish it could have happened some other way. And I don't think it's just because of that. But I do think the things that are irrelevant are dying away. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes on in the church that is pointless and irrelevant, and I think it's been exposed this year. So, and in politics and in government, all those things. So, you know, it's better to stay optimistic. It's better to stay hopeful. It's 11:11, is it? I'll take your word for it. I don't have my watch on. For those of you that maybe didn't see the post, this week, I was really feeling sad about not seeing my granddaughters for Christmas and not getting to see the baby, because this would be the first year that Clementine would be able to really sort of see a tree and get it. Last year she was just too little. And I was just sad about it. And at 11:11, I remember at 11:11, I got an email from the concierge that says, you have a package to pick up. And I thought, Ken had ordered some shoes. I thought that's what it was. I went down there and Christina had sent me a candle. There's pictures of it on my Instagram. Hey Fred, great morning. Signed on in 11:11. Speaking healing and health to you and Miss Roz too. But when I got the opened the package, it was a candle that said 11:11 and had a little description on it about the, you know, the significance of seeing that number constantly. It was just right on time for several reasons. I just loved it. It's one of my favorite gifts I ever got, just because of the timing of it. And so that's awesome. Sophia and Olivia are they're down in Florida now with their dad. He's been deployed, but he's home now. So they're spending close to a month with him and his wife and his stepdaughters. And I have a lot of little girls I'm connected to, because my son-in-law has four daughters in his previous marriage. He has a daughter in his marriage with Christina. My ex-son-in-law has two stepdaughters. So Sophia and Olivia have, what is that, seven stepsisters? And so anyway, they're down there, and then Todd and Christina are driving up to L.A. to see his daughters, and then she's going to meet with Jarrett. He and Rebecca live out there, and then they're going to drive to Colorado, because their sister, who is their half-sister, Haley, lives in Colorado, and she had a baby. They haven't even seen him yet. So they're driving up there. That's that's modern families run amok, all these blended families and everything. But nothing but peace on earth, goodwill toward everybody today. So this is what I want to talk about. Maybe I'll do this song Wednesday night at our party. I'm also thinking about not just doing the party, but I think Christmas Eve, maybe like around 11:30, close to midnight, I may go live and just spend a little time with you if anybody's up that late. And I used to love to go to some of these like midnight masses or midnight on Christmas Eve. So there's something very, very cool about that time on Christmas Eve. So I may do that. Just stay tuned. I think Facebook notifies you if somebody's going live. So nothing super structured, just spending a little Christmas Eve time. But the song "Do You Hear What I Hear" has three questions and a statement. It starts by saying it's a very interesting concept. It was written. It's a relatively new song. It was written in 1962, but it starts by saying, said the night wind to the little lamb, do you see what I see? Way up in the sky, little lamb, a star, dancing in the night with a tail as big as a kite, with a tail as big as a kite. So the first question is, do you see what I see? Remember that. The second question is, it's about communication. So the in the story, which last night, one of the comments on one of the songs I posted last night, Shonda Corelli said, "You're a great storyteller. I love to hear you sing. You're a great storyteller." That meant a lot to me, especially from somebody that's like her, such a great communicator with her music. But in the story of the song, the next thing is, it says, "The little lamb to the shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? A song high above the trees, with a voice as big as the sea, with a voice as big as the sea." So the second question is, beyond do you see what I see, do you hear what I hear? So then the shepherd boy goes to a king, and he says, said the shepherd boy to the mighty king, "Do you know what I know? In your palace warm, mighty king, a child shivers in the cold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Let us bring him silver and gold." And then there's a key change, and then the message of something that you learn from what somebody saw, what somebody heard, then what then what somebody knows. The king stands up, because the king has more agency. He has a bigger platform. So from that message, from the night wind to the little lamb to the shepherd boy, the king says, said the king to the people everywhere, "Listen to what I say. The child sleeping in the night, he will bring us goodness and light. He will bring us goodness and light." It's a great song. And I've actually ministered on it before. The whole idea of connecting with people who see what you see, hear what you hear, know what you know, and listen to what you say. Amos 3:3 says, "How can two walk together lest they be agreed?" He's not saying that one party is necessarily wrong. He just says they can't walk together because they don't have the agreement. One is not seeing what the other one is seeing. One is not hearing what the other one is hearing. Tomorrow night is December 21st. It's the winter solstice. And there's something happening tomorrow night that only happens every 400, sometimes maybe even 800 years. And it's called the Great Conjunction. Any of you in my age group, anytime you hear the word conjunction, my neuropaths go right back to Schoolhouse Rock. Conjunction, junction, what's your function? And which, by the way, all the Schoolhouse Rock is on Hulu, and they're all brilliant. I've watched several of them recently, but in grammar, a conjunction is it's a word like and, but, or that connects two different thoughts. And in astronomy, a conjunction is when, and if you're a flat earther, you just go ahead and check out right now, because your concept will not work with the truth. So believe what you want to believe, but the fact is, the Earth is a sphere that rotates and revolves around another sphere called the Sun. That's why we have a solar system. And so as these other spheres, I was taught there was 9 planets, and then Pluto, bless its heart, got demoted a few years ago. And I'm not sure what the current... it's Reggie's birthday? Happy birthday, Reginald. Love you, bud. You mean tomorrow is Reggie's birthday. Okay, got it. So December 21st is when, depending on where you are on the Earth, the planets, where they will be in the field of vision, they converge and they make a much brighter, what looks like a star, but it's actually a conjunction of two planets. And many historians believe that what the wise men saw, that they call the Bethlehem Star, was actually a great conjunction. It was two planets aligning. I wish I didn't think in songs so much, because now I'm thinking, when the moon is in the seventh house. If you have no idea all the noise that's going on in here at all times. Anyway, in the song Aquarius, it's, and Jupiter aligns with Mars. What's happening tomorrow night is Jupiter is aligning with Saturn. And that happens about every 20 years. The last great conjunction was in the year 2000. The last conjunction was in the year 2000. The reason is our planet goes around in 365 what we call days. Saturn is further out, so it takes about 7 years of our years to make a full revolution. And then Jupiter is even further out, and it takes nearly 30 of our years, like 29 and a half. So all of these planets are revolving at different times, or making a revolution. They're revolving at different times. So from your field of vision, the last great conjunction was in the year 1623. And so what's happening is tomorrow night, what we call the winter solstice, which on Earth makes it the shortest day, the longest night. And like when people say, Jesus is the reason for the season, they just don't know about history, because Saturn was actually the reason for the season. The pagans, and when I say pagan, I don't mean that in a derogative way. I'm saying so you'll understand what I'm talking about. The pre-Christian world, let me say it that way. They celebrated on December 21st, they celebrated Saturnalia. They always did. They would make a sacrifice to the god of Saturn. And so the Catholic Church Christianized Saturnalia and made Jesus the reason for the season. Jesus was actually born around the first week of April. And I've talked about that. But so what's happening is tomorrow night, there's a great conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter. Happened very long, but they will converge, and it's going to be very, very bright. And I don't know how in the world the Magi, I don't know enough about their history, and you know, they weren't Jewish, they were from Persia, what is now Iraq. They were they practiced Zoroastrianism, which is an older religion than Judaism or Christianity. And somehow, that you know, they were not just astronomers, they were astrologers. They practiced divination. That's why we have the word magi. The magi is where we get the word magic or magician. They were magicians who understood astrology. And I don't know how they knew about the king, but that was going to be born in Bethlehem. But they traveled all the way from where they were to meet with Herod. And they said, where is he who was born the king of the Jews? For we've seen his star in the east, and we've come to worship him. Now, that's an interesting concept, and I'll come back to that in just a moment. I've posted about this before, and most of my metron, you know, the word metron just means sphere of influence. So when I say metron, I mean, most of the people hear my voice, know me well enough, they probably wouldn't dismiss or make fun of something that I say. But I have said before that when things happen in the celestial realm, some people say I'm imagining, but I feel it. I feel shifts in consciousness when things happen in the heavens. And I'm not really even necessarily into astrology. I don't think it's evil. I just, it's just not really my thing. I mean, I've read, I'm an Aries. I've read the definition or the description of Aries, and I think, well, that sounds about right. But then I can read the descriptions of other Scorpio and Sagittarius, and I think, well, that sounds like me too. Depends on depends on what season it is. So I'm kind of neutral on it, I guess. But I do feel like, you know, when there's an eclipse or there's a thing, I just feel it. There's a whole school of thought that people who, I don't want to say I'm prone to vertigo, because I hate to even say the word. If you've ever had vertigo, it is the devil. It's, vertigo to me is worse than any pain I've ever had in my body. And I've gotten a lot better about it. It's a, you know, biologically it's an inner ear thing. But there's a lot of people that believe, people who are prone to being tuned in, like if you have tinnitus or tinnitus, sometimes it's because you're hearing, some people say it's hearing loss, other people say, well, you're tuning into frequencies from other dimensions. I don't know which is true. The latter sounds a little sexier to me than just losing your hearing. But like my cousin LaDonna, I don't know if she'll watch this or not, but a lot of times if there's a thing going on with the planets, she'll text me and say, I just want to make sure you have some Bonine with you, because the planets are lining up in a certain way, and sometimes it you know, it messes with your head. And I think, thanks for telling me. I'd make a little trip to CVS just in case. Some people will laugh at that. Fine. You know, I'm just in a different place than you are. You don't hear what I hear, so I'm not really talking to you. If you don't hear what I hear, you're not going to listen to what I say. That's what I love about that song. Do you see what I see? Do you hear what I hear? Do you know what I know? Or otherwise, you can't listen to what I say. That's why I don't take it personally when people, you know, disconnect from me. I think, you know, you just don't hear what I hear. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. There ain't no good guy. There ain't no bad guy. There's only you and me, and we just disagree. There's another song for you. It's good I'm not having to pay royalties on all these songs today. So I'm going to come back to that in just a moment, because I think tomorrow, December 21st, the winter solstice, Saturnalia, and the great conjunction. Google it, look it up, because I, you know, this isn't my area, so I can't really explain it much better to you than I have. But I get it on a gut level. And just the whole idea, like I was thinking, what does a conjunction mean? It means a connection of things. And yes. Beth, you're so funny. You swear to the law. I cannot read your comments. They're going to distract me. I'll read them later. But, yeah, so if you are connected by planetary movement, make sure you got the right meds in the house for yourself tomorrow. Because for some of us, it's real. Now, when I think about the word conjunction, and I think about, this is the Sunday before Christmas, one thing that has always fascinated me about the Christmas story, I mean, most of our Christian Christmas story is in Matthew and in Luke. Mark never talks about the nativity. If you've got my book, Gospels in the Now, I go into detail about why each of these writers, if indeed they did write them. I mean, listen, anybody who is an absolutist about the Bible is a fool, because there's just way too much gray area in it. But from what we know, if Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John actually wrote these books, or oversaw the writing of them, or the writings were taken from their teachings, Mark has a different personality. He's a younger man, and he's not interested in the birth of Jesus. He, you know, Mark's got Jesus casting out demons in the first chapter. Jesus, a grown man already in the ministry. And then John's so ethereal. John, you know, he doesn't even talk about the nativity. He's like, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I mean, John was just on a whole other level than the synoptic writers. The only thing he even slightly alludes to about the incarnation is in John 1:14, where he says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. But there's no nativity story of record. Matthew talks about the Magi. Luke talks about the shepherds. I've done extensive teaching on both those concepts. I want to say some things about the Magi today that perhaps I haven't said before. But when I'm in thinking about tomorrow being the winter solstice, the great conjunction, Saturnalia, the idea of Saturn and Jupiter aligning and creating the Bethlehem star. It's interesting how in the Christmas story, there's so many movable parts to it, and it's all about people connecting. Like in the first chapter of Luke is where we have the Annunciation. It's where Gabriel appears to Mary, and he tells her that she's going to be impregnated by the Holy Spirit. And, I mean, it's, you know, something she would have never imagined. I mean, she says, how can this be, seeing that I'm non-sexual? I mean, I haven't been with a man. And he tells her that the Holy Spirit will overshadow her. And you know what I taught a couple of weeks ago. I believe in a virgin birth. I don't believe in it for the reason that the traditional church believes in it. The traditional church does not hear what I hear. They don't see what I see. They don't know what I know. So they don't listen to what I say. And I'm fine with that. Believe me, if the last 4 years hasn't done anything else, it's definitely galvanized my disconnection from the traditional church. When I see how the church has become a cult of personality beyond politics, when I see evangelicals this week who were online calling for violence, calling for people to take weapons to the street and overthrow this election, I think, I don't know who you people are anymore. If that's what being a Christian is now, then definitely renounce me. I am completely disconnected from you. Because if I ever wondered if you guys had discernment, now I know you don't. So God bless you. I'm happy to shake the dust off my feet and get some new shoes. And I say that with no bitterness. I just think, nope, I am not that. Come up with another word. If that's what a Christian is, do not call me that. I would be insulted that you would put that label upon me. So in the Christmas story, she says, how can this be, seeing that I don't know a man? And he tells her, and then just on the heels of it, he says, and your cousin Elizabeth, who is postmenopausal, she's also pregnant. Well, Mary didn't know that because Zechariah and Elizabeth had been married for a long time. They were kind of like Abraham and Sarah, didn't have any children. And he says, yeah, she's pregnant too. It's there's a lot going on. And so immediately, if you read the rest of Luke chapter 1, she leaves there and goes to talk to Elizabeth. And it says, as soon as they salute one another, the babies, which was Jesus and John the Baptist, in the womb leapt. It's a very powerful analogy for what happens when you meet somebody who hears what you hear, sees what you see, says what, knows what you know. It's something, it's like having a baby leap in the womb. It's like you feel, wow, something is in me. Whew. I just felt that. I'm pregnant with something that's about to be birthed. I didn't know I was pregnant until what you said made the baby leak. That's why even now, sometimes you'll read somebody post, I'll post something and somebody say, oh, Bishop, that made my baby leap. That's what they mean. It means something deep inside me responded viscerally to what you said. Something about that word shifted my reality, and it just changed my perception. I now, either I hear what you hear, or I just realize I've been hearing what you've been hearing. I didn't know it till you said that. I mean, I never wanted to make a rule out of this, because I think there's exceptions to every rule. But like when I pastored, and I'm still a pastor, I mean, I've counseled with people all week long, all week this week, prayed for people. I mean, my pastoral duties have never ceased. And there's a lot of people that have never been to Metro, and they haven't seen me in years and still consider me their pastor. It used to bother me. Now, I don't know, in some kind of way I've made peace with it. I'm like, you know, it's fine. I mean, I guess I used to want people to come to Metro so much that I would be offended at it. Now I'm just like, it is what it is. I hear from people all the time who will say, you haven't heard from me since 1995, but you have the words of life. Will you speak to this, whatever? And I do. I don't like doing funerals for people that I haven't seen in 20 years that don't pay me. I don't like that. But as far as speaking a word, yeah, I'll do that. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. I don't like it. I don't like when other preachers go through that either. But so the Christmas story is about, it's a great conjunction of Mary and Elizabeth. And then you've got these magi who are seeing a star in the east. Now, this is what's fascinating to me about this. I don't know how long it would have taken them to go from Persia to Israel, Palestine. But it's not like you could just back then go online and buy a plane ticket and hop on a plane and be there in a couple of hours. I mean, if you traveled from country to country, if you even just traveled from city to city, it was a big deal. I mean, you had to ride on an animal. You had to walk. There were places where roads weren't built. You know, like in Isaiah where he says, every valley should be exalted, every mountain will be brought low. He was talking about the ancient practice of having to go before a potentate and creating a road for them, because there wasn't a highway system. We take for granted that, you know, in the United States you can get on a road and drive anywhere, and there's a Department of Transportation in every city. But in ancient times there wasn't that. I've been to third world countries before where something would happen on a road would be washed out, and we couldn't make it to the meeting that night because there was nobody to call. They didn't have a government that would send out machinery to fix the road. You take it for granted when you live on, you know, with expressways. And that's why all these people that are always cursing traffic, I think, I'm on such a different wavelength than you. I'm so grateful that we have roads that, because I've been in places where travel was very difficult. A little bit of traffic doesn't bother me. But again, not everybody hears what I hear. Not everybody sees what I see. So, I mean, suffice it to say, for these three magician kings to want to go all the way to Jerusalem, I mean, that's a commitment. I don't even know how long it would have taken them. And, you know, when they finally got there, even if they arrived around the winter solstice, it would have still taken time for them to go to Bethlehem. And, you know, by the time they reached Mary, Jesus, and Joseph, they probably weren't even in the stable. You know, they were just in the stable because, you know, there was no room for them in the inn. So you can't get too legalistic about the details of that story, because the Bible's written by different people. That's why when people say the Bible's infallible, I think you must not have ever read it. It's full of fallibility. It's inspired, but it's totally fallible and misinterpreted, and words are wrong. I mean, it's just, I'm astounded at bibliolatry. But it's, again, it's just people who, they're just destroyed for a lack of knowledge. They think this book came down out of heaven and a voice said, this book is infallible. I promise you, the Bible writers, if Paul himself or Jeremiah or any of these people, if they were standing here with me, they would stick their head into the frame and say, no, he's telling the truth. We never said it was infallible. Well, Bishop, all scripture is given by inspiration. Yeah, it is inspired. I'm inspired. I believe God speaks through me, but my words are not infallible. You don't just do everything that I say. If I said, you know what, I just feel like y'all ought to get up on top of your house and jump off the roof, I would hope, even if you love me, you would say, yeah, he lost me on that one. I mean, because my words are not infallible, but they are inspired. The very fact that the scriptures have to be rightly divided means they don't claim to be infallible. Infallibility is a false doctrine, and it's not what the church fathers believed, nor it's certainly not what the writers would have believed. The writers of the Bible books, the books that are comprised in our Bible, would be horrified to see what bibliolatry has done in the modern world. They'd just be horrified by it. The letter kills. I don't care if it's the letter of the Quran or the Bible or whatever, it kills. The Spirit gives life. The letter is only there to reflect the Spirit. There's something higher than even the Hebrew and the Greek. It's the Spirit. So what's amazing about these men is, you know, they come to Herod, and Herod has no idea. Herod doesn't know what the prophets of old had predicted about a Messiah. So they said, where is he who's born the King of the Jews? We've seen his star in the east, and we have come to worship him. Not, we have come to convert to Christianity. They came and worshiped him and went back to their homeland as astrologers and Zoroastrians. They did not convert to Christianity. They did not move to Jerusalem. They didn't become one of the disciples. They came to acknowledge him, worship him. Look, Herod didn't even know. Remember, he had to call an expert in that says, where did the prophet say the king would be born? And they searched through, and they found that in the book of Micah, he had said that he'd be born in Bethlehem. So that's why those three men went to Bethlehem. And then, you know, when Herod sends out an edict to kill all the firstborn children, because he was threatened, intimidated by this king. I mean, like, wow, this guy's set up by astrological signs, like for the heavens are declaring this guy's a super king. I mean, this could really threaten me. I'm not gonna concede my throne. I'm gonna just kill the baby boys. And that's why when they went and presented their gifts and worshiped him, but then they didn't go back to Jerusalem, because they were warned in a dream. They were afraid that Herod might kill them too. But again, there's a great conjunction of Mary and Elizabeth, the Magi and the Holy Family. The shepherds, you know, the shepherds they're out in the fields, and the angels come and sing to them. And the angels just sing the good news. The angels don't appear to the shepherds and say, y'all better straighten up your act and stop smoking and drinking. No, they said, behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people, not just Israelites, but Zoroastrians who are not going to convert to Judaism, which shall be to all people, for unto you is born this day in the city of David, not a condemner. He did not come to condemn the world, but the world through him might be saved. Not a condemner, but a savior, who is Christ the Lord. And these shepherds, who are not theologians, they probably never read prophets' words. These were like country boys. They also converge, probably not at the same time. You know, when you see nativity scenes now, you see shepherds and wise men. It's kind of a composite of things that would have happened over a series of months, maybe a couple of years. But what you see is all these movable pieces, not the least of which is in Luke chapter 2. It says, and there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus, because, you know, Herod was the king of Israel, But Israel was a part of the Roman Empire. So Caesar Augustus would have had higher ranking. Herod was a king. Augustus was an emperor. So Caesar, it says, there went a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And everybody had to go into their hometown. You couldn't just go online and pay your taxes or go to H&R Block. It was like a census. And you had to go to your hometown. Well, Joseph was born in Bethlehem. So here you have, it's like this big chessboard. You got all these people being moved around to confirm this word that Micah had said centuries before. Otherwise, Joseph would have never gone to Bethlehem. I mean, he might not have ever been there since he was a boy. So you think about this. Here's Mary, who was just a simple girl that gets engaged to a carpenter. I mean, you know, it's a good choice. I mean, a carpenter is always going to have work. He's a good, hardworking, blue-collar man. You know, Gabriel comes in and just ruins everything. You know, tells her this whole thing like, no, you're not just going to be married to this carpenter. You're going to give birth to the Son of God. And I mean, she would have never asked for that. That's why, you know, as much as I believe in the power of intention, you can't rule out the idea of just being surprised. Some things are going to come into your life that you weren't even looking for. And so, have your goals and your vision board and write your stuff and everything, but also leave room for divine choreography. But you think about this girl, here she's betrothed, which would be our modern idea of engagement. She's engaged to this guy, and she says, Joseph, I need to tell you, I'm pregnant. So that's a blow right there. You know, your fiance is pregnant, somebody else's baby. And then she goes from sounding promiscuous to sounding crazy. Because she says, I haven't been with a man. You're the only man I've even been around. And an archangel appeared to me and told me I was going to be pregnant. I mean, there's nobody in the world that would believe that. And in fact, according to the Luke narrative, God gives Joseph a dream that confirms the story, which I think was God's reasonable service, because there's nobody in the world that would have believed that. I mean, I've visualized this for years, so I've filled in a lot of the blanks, but I guarantee you there's nobody in Mary's world that would have believed that. Not her mother, not her girlfriends. I'm sure if she had any friends at all, they would have taken her aside and said, Mary, look, this is me. You can talk to me. I'm not going to judge you, but who'd you sleep with? I mean, come on, really? God got you pregnant? Really? Just tell me. I want to, you know, I love you, girl. Tell, you know, who, but she says, no, I'm telling you the truth. I'm a virgin. So, you know, we think about the idea of virgin birth as, oh, it's a beautiful thing. In Mary's world, it probably destroyed her life, because it's the kind of thing where you would just become a laughingstock in a community. And it still followed Jesus, even when he went to his hometown when he was an adult. The people in the hometown still didn't buy it. They said, oh, that's just Joseph the carpenter's son. They didn't believe in a virgin birth. How ironic is that? Zoroastrians from Persia believe it, but the people in the hometown, I mean, people are walking by the stable in Bethlehem. If you told them that's the King of Kings, they wouldn't have believed that. So, you know, I would, this is in my imagination, but I would imagine that through Mary's pregnancy, and Joseph was a good man, even before he got the confirmation from God, he had already determined not to put her away privately. He wasn't going to disgrace her. But I would imagine it was the kind of thing that would bond two people. So here in, you know, the third trimester of her pregnancy, there's this decree from Caesar Augustus. Again, this is, you know, you're not going to get this on an email. This is somebody coming to your town. Behold the decree of Caesar Augustus. Everyone must go to your home town and be and fill out the census and pay your taxes. So he says to Mary, I have to do it. I've got to go to Bethlehem. And, you know, she's close to going into labor. And she says, well, what about me? And he says, well, you can't go with me. It's too, you're about to give birth, and it's too dangerous, trip, and you got to ride on a donkey. And in my imagination, I hear her say, you're not going without me. You're the only one I've got. Nobody else speaks to me now. Nobody else believes, you know, they think I'm a loose woman and a liar and a blasphemer. No, I'm going with you. We'll figure it out when we get there. And this is before booking.com. You couldn't, you know, go online. Bethlehem, I'm looking for a suite. And is there an emergency room with a OBGYN close by, because my wife's close? No, there's none of that. You just get on a donkey or a camel and go and hope for the best. And so, you know, by the time they get to Bethlehem, she's having labor pains. He can't find any place to even bring in a midwife to deliver. So they end up in a stable. You know the story. But the point is, you have people all over the Roman Empire, which was the known world at that time. All these thousands of people are en route to hometowns because of this one decree. And it's a great conjunction. It's like Mary and Elizabeth. It's wise men and shepherds. It's people going to their hometown. It's like all these things getting in line for this amazing thing that happens. It's beyond a great conjunction. It's all these people being connected that can't get the rest of their story until they meet that person. You know, speaking of the wise men, when in Acts 17, you know, there in verse 28 where he says, in him we live and move and have our being. That came from a sermon when Paul was in Rome. He was on, there's a place called Mars Hill. You can still visit it. And because the Romans were polytheists, they had a god to everything. I mean, these people in the ancient world who didn't live by electric lights, they knew a lot more about celestial. The average person knew a lot more about planets and stars than we do now, because we live more indoors. We live by electric lights. We don't see it. You have to intentionally be an astronomer now to know this stuff and have telescopes and that sort of thing. But that's why some of these parks out west have, it's a big draw now for people who will go and see the sky like it looked to the ancient world, because there's no electric lights around. I mean, even the ancient Egyptians would build pyramids in a way that, like, because they knew the way that the sun would hit it a certain way, and even the whole concept of Stonehenge and sundials, all that sort of thing was because people, you know, the ancient world, they were much more celestial-minded than the modern world is. And so you have a real connection with Saturn and Jupiter creating the Bethlehem star to all this connection, this great connection with people. And what I was going to say about the wise men, what was I going to say about them? There's something I brought up about them. There's so many thoughts in my head. I guess I've made my point about them. If it comes back to me, I'll say something about it. But anyway, when you think about what Christmas means to you, and it's really a time when we just honor the people in our life that we've connected with. I know that there have been people I've met in my life. Oh, I know what I was going to say earlier. Hold that thought. I was going to say this earlier. I never made it a rule, but when I used to pastor the church, if somebody came to me and said, we've been coming to your church for several weeks, we're still trying to decide if this is our church, we don't know yet, I would nearly always say to them, look, you're welcome to come here, but I don't think this is your church. I'm telling you, I think you're probably wasting your time, because most of the people who really hear my voice, do you hear what I hear? Do you see what I see? Do you know what I know? They kind of know it the first time they hear me. Like when I've heard people over the years say, wow, you know what? You say things, I don't know if I knew it or not, but I felt like I knew it, or it's things that I thought always, but I was afraid to say it. When I heard you say it, it located something in me. It was a great conjunction, and it released me to believe what I believe. And I would say, well, I'm your pastor. Most of you that have stayed with me through all the transition, well, there's a lot of people that used to be connected to Church in the Now that don't connect with me now, and I think it's fine. I probably never was your pastor. You were into churchiness, but you probably never really heard my voice, because if you really heard my voice, it would be difficult for you to disconnect from me. I'm just telling you. I've seen it played out. I've seen it played out so much that in the past I've had people who have said to me, look, I know we've had a falling out and we're mad at each other. I'm not even speaking to you and blah, 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 but you're the only one that has the words of life for me. Can you please tell me such and such and such? And I really applauded their candor, because you think, wow, they're humbling themselves enough to say, I'm mad at you, or I don't like this or that about you, but I can't deny it. You know, you're my boo. You're my pastor. And you can't make that happen. Like, sometimes those of you that love my ministry, you've brought a family member because you said, oh, you got to hear this guy. You got to hear this guy. Never a man spake like this man. And you bring your loved ones in and they're like, I don't get it. What's the big deal? And it's because they're just not, they just don't hear what you hear. I thought about this week, even in doing a lot of songs and posting them online. I hear things very deeply. Like if something makes me laugh, I laugh hard at it. Like I can think about something my friend Howie and I laughed about in college when I was 18 years old. And I'll still double over in laughter thinking about it, because I feel I'm just dialed up. I laugh hard. Or if I hear a song, I cry at it. If I hear there's certain movies, like when I met Ken, bless his heart, thank God he passed the test. But when I met him, I said, this isn't true for all movies. There's some movies that I like you don't have to like. But there's a few of them, if you don't like this, if this movie doesn't touch you, let me just tell you, we're probably not going to make it, because you don't hear what I hear. And thank God he did. And some people said, that's horrible to put him through that. I'm thinking, look, I'm just saving us both some time. We're not getting any younger. And if you're not on the same page with me, you might be cute and all that kind of stuff. I don't have years to waste being with the wrong person. So, and I don't even necessarily think there's such a thing as the soulmate. I think you can have it, you know, I don't think there's just this one person, but it does have to be somebody that hears what you hear, sees what you see, knows what you know, and is at least open to hearing what you say. I was talking to Christine about it this week. I said, you know, in relationships, there's no point in yelling at somebody for not hearing what you hear, because they just don't hear. They're just dialed differently. It doesn't mean you're better than them or smarter than them or even necessarily more spiritual than them. It just means they're at a 4 and you're at a 10 and you're just on two different channels. And like I'm at a point in my life, I love an exchange of ideas, and I don't even want to convert anybody. I'm like, you believe what you want to believe, namaste. But if you don't hear what I hear, I just don't want to hang out with you. Like sometimes I'll be with somebody and they'll say something and I think, oh, this is why I don't like being with this person. This is why I don't like coming to this house. This is why I don't like to, I just don't think you're a bad person. It's just, we don't hear the same thing. We're, we're tuned into something else. I don't want to argue with you. I respect your belief system. It's just not mine. And I want to, for whatever time I have left on the earth, I want to be with people that flow with me. Some people say, well, you're not open to new ideas. No, I see everybody's ideas all the time. I'm bombarded with ideas. Like some time ago, somebody, when I had the church in the now, somebody said, I think you ought to put a big suggestion box out in the narthex and let people tell you what they don't like about the ministry. I said, I already have that. It's called the mail and email and counseling appointments. I'm bombarded with people who are constantly telling me what they don't like. I don't need any more addition to it. That was a long time ago. But when I think back to my own journey and certain great conjunctions that I've had with people, like, I can remember times in my life where somebody would say something to me, and just that word they would say, I would think, oh, you just changed my life. You don't even know what you just said. But my tectonic plates just shifted. Like, I'm not going to be the same after you just said that. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Hold that thought. Yes, I have the mind of Christ. Everything eventually comes back to me. What I was going to say about the Zoroastrians, and then I'll come back to conjunctions and I'll wrap it up. I don't even know what time it is. Somebody tell me what time it is, because I might need to shut up. I've told you this story before, but years ago when I was working with the Global Peace Festival, I traveled around the world, and it was a very ecumenical group. You know, you'd be with priests and rabbis and shamans, and it was very interesting. I learned a lot from it. And one of the festivals we did was in Seoul, Korea. It was the largest crowd I've ever spoken to. But they estimated about 75,000 people there. And so we were at a planning breakfast for it. And I was there at the table with some Japanese Buddhist monks. They, you know, had their bald heads and their orange, I don't know what you call the robe they wear. They were in those orange robes, and they didn't speak any English. I didn't speak any Japanese. Really sweet spirits. And our interpreter was telling us that these men, to become priests, they have to go through this whole thing. Is it really 1203? Oh, my Lord. All right, I got to wrap up. Sorry. I didn't know it was so late. This is why I need a clock to shut me up. Maybe I should make this a two-parter. Maybe I'll go a little bit later, if y'all are still with me. Byron says, doesn't matter, keep going. What Byron said. So, these guys, to become monks, they have to, you can't believe what they have to do. It's things like stand under a waterfall for 7 days and fast for 40 days. I'm like, all these crazy, not crazy, all these extreme things they have to do. I mean, to become a monk, they got to really... Kevin says, keep going. Avery says, keep going. All right. Colonel Rogers said, preach in capital letters. most of you have heard me tell this story, but I remember when the interpreter was telling me what those guys did, I remember thinking, you know, where I came from, the Christians I know would make fun of that. You know, they would say, they ain't washed in the blood. They ain't real. You know, we even used to sing, the Imperials did a song back in the 70s. Well, it won't be old Buddha that's sitting on the throne. And it won't be old Muhammad that's calling us home. And it won't be Hare Krishna that plays that trumpet too. And we're going to see the sun, not Reverend Moon. And I remember back in the 70s, people would sing that and just hoot and holler. Those Christians just make fun of the Buddhists and hoo-hoo, they ain't washed in the blood like us. And I remember even back then, I would think, why does this song embarrass me? I just used to not like that song. And I remember years later, after I met Reverend Moon and some people from his organization, I was in Jerusalem baptizing people in the Jordan River, and I referred to that song. I said, you know, 40 years ago, I've never believed I'd be here baptizing. It was such a holy moment. Baptizing people who love Reverend Moon, that they see him in a different way than I do. I don't believe he is who they believe he is, but I respect their belief system, and they want to be baptized, so I'm baptizing them. And I said, in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, in the name of Jesus. I mean, I did it all. And I've learned it from the three wise men, because they came to worship him, not to convert him or be converted. So I remember, you know, when you're talking to somebody who doesn't speak your language, you're trying to find a way to, you know, connect with them, to have a great conjunction. And I had on my clerical stuff, on my clerical collar, and when I don't wear vestments much now. I don't know if I'll ever wear them again, frankly. I'm just kind of post all that. I'm not against it. I respect people that still do it. I'm just in a different headspace. And but when you're wearing the collar, and you have your cross, if you're wearing a cassock, you let your cross hang loose. But if you're wearing a suit with a clerical shirt, you put your cross in the pocket. And there's a whole symbolism that the bishop wears the cross over his heart because he's willing to lay his life down for the church. And I've done so many funerals where I'm wearing, funerals and weddings, where I'm wearing like that, and somebody will come on and say, I need to fix your cross. It's in your pocket. I'm like, yeah, that's where it's supposed to be. Don't touch me again. But anyway, you know, we're trying to make hand signals to each other. So this Buddhist priest points to the chain around my neck, and he points to my pocket, meaning what's in there. I have this big cross that I bought in Jerusalem, big gaudy thing. I love it. It's a cross with bling. It's very ornate. And when I pulled out my cross, the three of them went, like they immediately bowed and honored my symbol. And it was such a moment for me, because I thought, wow, in my world, the Christians I know would make fun of you. They would make fun of your rituals, because you ain't washed in the blood like us. And here I'm looking at these men that are so reverent, honoring the cross that probably means something different to them than what it would mean to me. But have you ever had one of those moments where when somebody does something, it just washes through you? And I thought, whoa, I will not be the same. I can't tell that story without telling this one. I know y'all have heard it before, but years earlier, and I wasn't even ready for this at the time, I was preaching in Lagos, Nigeria, and before the service that night, I went up on the roof. I've always liked going up on roofs. I went up on the roof of the hotel, and I was praying. I was pacing back and forth. I was reading scriptures and praying in the spirit for the meeting that night. This tall Nigerian man, I swear he looked 7 feet tall, which Nigerians are not usually that tall, so he really stood out. And he's got a fez on, so I knew he was Muslim. And he's standing on the other side of the roof looking at me like this. So as I'm pacing back and forth praying, he just keeps getting closer and closer to me, to finally he's staring at me like this. And like, I'm on the edge of the building. I don't know. Am I not supposed to be up here? Am I the first white man that stayed in this hotel? I'm certainly the only white man I see within miles around from here. You know, am I doing something illegal? What am I, literally, there's that book, Prayers That Avail Much. There's a prayer in there for protection. I was like, where's that prayer? You know, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide in the shadow of the Almighty. So he gets right up to me, and he's so much in my space that I finally said, what? And he says in his accent, he goes, may God hear your prayers. I mean, it, there was such a force. I mean, it could have knocked me off the building. I'm not saying it nearly did, but it could have. And I said, how did you know I was praying? And he says, you are a man of prayer, and now I will pray with you. And what's interesting is the Muslims, they kneel and bow toward Mecca. He started pacing with me, and I kid you not, I'm praying, and I'm praying in the spirit. And he starts, I don't know what he was saying, but he paced back and forth with me for about 15 minutes, and he was chanting, mumbling something under his breath. And where I was at the time, I remember thinking, am I supposed to convert him to Christianity? I mean, like, I don't know, is this right? I'm praying with a Muslim, and I don't even know what we're doing. This isn't the way he prays, and what are we doing? I mean, he's walking with me and praying my way. Oh, what's happening? And I thank God your spirit knows stuff your mind doesn't know. The Holy Ghost said to me, you're doing just the exact right thing. And we just prayed. We had that. Wow. It's such a powerful memory for me all these years later. That was a great conjunction. Just a moment that reached into my future. If I hadn't had that moment, if that hadn't happened with the Buddhist monks, I wouldn't be standing here on this roof talking to you right now. There are things that happen in your life. There are conjunctions. It's not just Saturn and Jupiter lining up. It's the people you meet who connect you to things that make the baby in your womb leap. And I can look back. I remember Dr. Kelly Varner prophesying to me when we were in that first building in Conyers. He said, God sent me to tell you, you're going to do something nobody's ever done before. He said, I don't even know what it is. There's no precedent for it. You'll be the first. There'll be nobody to pattern after. And I remember thinking, what's never been done before? That prophecy, and I don't even know what, if he were alive today, he might not even be able to get his head around who I am now. Because that was long before I ever would have considered coming out. But then I remember years later, after I did come out, that's when I was still actively involved with TFAM. I still am on the College of Bishops, but I'm more emeritus. And that's my own choice. I adore Bishop Yvette Flunder. I think she's one of the most amazing women I've ever met. And when I first came out, she flew me up to Chicago to meet with the College of Bishops. And while I was there, I had dinner with a bishop who was not gay, but he had a big church, but his church had just become affirming. And he said, I feel like I've been wrong about gay people. I'm learning some things. He said, do you mind if I ask you some questions that I just don't know? And some of the questions he asked, you know, if it had been anybody else, I would have really been laughable. The stuff that people don't know, but it wasn't his experience. He didn't know. We had this beautiful dinner. And after we got through talking, he said, you know, before I met you, I would have never believed anybody was born gay. But he said, I not only believe that you were, I think you had to have been, because if you hadn't been gay, I don't think you would have ever challenged the religious system. He said, you would have just been another megachurch pastor that was part of the clique, and you'd have been on Christian TV, and you'd have had a big church. He said, but what you're going to do is so different from what any of those guys do. And I remember sitting there eating my food thinking, I will not be the same after you said that. I can look at all these touchstones in my life where they were a great conjunction. Here's what I want to leave with you today, because I know I've gone over time. And thanks for staying with me, because I do think this is important. And here's your prophetic word. when there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed, and Joseph, bless his heart, you think about, I know what it's like to be a young man with a pregnant wife and, you know, the pressure that you feel and we'll make sure you do everything right. I mean, I did that 4 times. So here he is, you know, becoming a father for the first time, and it's not even his baby. And a decree from Caesar Augustus could not have come at a worse time. Really, at a time when we should be fixing up the nursery, we got to make a road trip to Bethlehem, of all places. He might not have been to Bethlehem. He might not have even known anybody in Bethlehem. Well, he apparently didn't, because there's nobody they could stay with. It would be like if you were born someplace and moved away from there when you were 2 or 3 years old, and you have no connections there. And it just looked like the whole world was turning upside down. My God, maybe this is a prophetic word for all of us. Maybe what's happening with all the craziness in the world and in politics and with pandemics and COVIDs, maybe there's a new world coming. Maybe we're en route to Bethlehem so that a word can be fulfilled. Maybe the chaos that you felt in your life this year, maybe it's for a higher purpose. Maybe your spirit is seeing a star in the east. Maybe if it hadn't been for the chaos, you would have never left your comfort zone. You would have stayed in the security of your hometown. But you're being forced out of the comfort zone of your belief system, having to go to Bethlehem to be with your espoused wife, to be taxed. Oh, go read Luke chapter 2. All the world would be taxed. Maybe every single chaotic thing that you have experienced in your life has been all the pieces of the puzzle coming together. Maybe the Mary in you had to meet an Elizabeth somewhere, and that the baby in you couldn't leap until you met her and heard that salutation. Maybe, as difficult as that trip to Jerusalem was, maybe you could have never fulfilled that thing until you went there. Maybe until you saw the star in the east, as illogical as it was. Maybe you just need to get your arms around this whole year and say, by God, 2020 is the best year of my life. Christmas 2020 is the greatest Christmas of my life. Not because I have more this year, or I'm having big parties, all the things that used to help me define what is a great Christmas, all of my definitions have been destroyed and exploded. Every way that I define a great Christmas has been turned upside down. My whole world has been turned upside down. Guess what? Merry Christmas. And through all of the craziness, you're going to find people who see what you see, who hear what you hear, who know what you know. Who will listen to what you say. I don't know what you're experiencing where you are, but right now on this roof, I feel the presence of God. As strong as I have ever felt it in my life. Wherever you are, just take a moment and embrace that presence. Listen, the presence of God Listen to me. The presence of God transcends Christianity. The presence of God transcends Jesus. Even Jesus said, "It's necessary that I go away." I speak peace to you. I hope you'll log on Wednesday night for our Zoom gathering and Christmas Eve. If you want to send a gift, I'll post all my links. I love you. Merry Christmas.